FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It is September 7th, 2017. We've got Hurricane Irma bearing down on us here in sunny South Florida. What will happen with that? Nobody's sure. But hopefully it will make a nice turn east and just spare us, but you can't count on these things happening, just like you can't count on economic hurricanes from sparing you either. And as always, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. Only about 35 emails behind. If I evacuate, I'll have lots of time to spend answering emails, so don't hesitate. And somebody who's been pretty spot on about the price of gold and other markets is with us now. You've heard him before, Eric Haddock, insidetrack.com, and that's inside with two I's. InsideTrack.com. Eric, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Terry. Great to be here.
Hey, always a pleasure. So, hey, you've been spot on about the precious metals markets, and we'll start with them, but we'll go to other markets as well. Since my first interview with you back in, I believe it was December of 2015, you called the exact highs, the lows, and you were hedging a little bit on gold going higher in the third quarter, but here we are. And today we look at our charts and gold is right around the 1344 mark. It's up $9.90 the ounce. Silver right at $18 the ounce, up 15 cents. And it's only 10 a.m. Eastern time in the morning. So you've been pretty spot on about this, Eric. I've heard a lot of other people prognosticating about it, hemming and hawing, but you've been spot on.
Well, one of the things that I've tried to stress with gold, and this really started back in 2013, 2014, was just the normal progression that a market goes through, and if it's going to be a well-defined and pretty organized movement, there are certain things you see. And back in 2013, 2014, when I was explaining why I didn't think we'd see a major bottom till 2015, and then 2016, I expected to see the first convincing rally, but that even that, if it's a really sustainable uptrend, it's not going to go to the moon right away. Instead, you're going to get an advance that exceeds previous ones, reaches some key resistance, maybe breaks through some 6 to 12 month resistance levels. And then just when everyone, all the gold bugs are salivating and frothing at the mouth, that's when it turns back down and retraces much of those initial gains. That's so standard textbook wave progression. And so that's what was expected in 2016. Even back in late 2015, I explained why I thought we'd see a secondary low at the end of 2016 and that it would be just above the levels of 2015. When we were in the middle of 2016, no one wanted to hear that it could go back down there. But when it did, that just reinforced to me that this was the ideal type of bottoming process for a much bigger bull market down the road. And as we came into this year, in fact, in my January Inside Track newsletter, I explained and kind of illustrated that what you will often see, if it's really going to be the best structure of a market, you would then see a little bit of a microcosm of what happened in 2016, kind of a similar up and down wave on one lesser magnitude. And so my expectation was to see a 3 to 4 month advance to begin 2017 and then about a 2-month correction. And again, it would be a higher low again, this time higher than the late 2016 low. And if that happened, we should see the critical low for 2017 occur right at mid-year. There were other cycles also that came into play in between mid-June and early July, weekly, daily, and monthly cycles. And so it was the synergy, of all these things that was telling me mid-2017 was the ideal time for that second pullback low, and the third quarter should be the beginning of a more sustained, more convincing uptrend in gold in particular. And that gold stocks are still diverging and lagging. Yes, they've gone up along with gold, but they're just now finally retesting, spiking a little bit above their April lows, whereas gold's well above it, April highs. Gold's well above its April highs. The gold stocks are still well below their February highs. Gold's well above the comparable level. And that's what you see in the early stages and the late stages of a big trend. When gold is not really accelerating one direction or the other, the gold stocks tend to follow, but not follow in lockstep. And on your bigger up and down days in gold, they'll be moving with it. But then there's other factors impacting them that kind of keep them, in this case, keep them under pressure when gold's not breaking out. So all that to say is that since January, the focus has been for a secondary low in mid-2017. I thought we'd see a moderate rally here and then a pullback into mid or late September. That still is a possibility because as you get a market accelerating, the moves start to occur in far less time. So if gold can peak right in here and then see a quick, sharp 1 to 2 week pullback, that could actually be the ideal setup for a breakout move to the upside. So we're certainly following most of that. There's, you know, been some day-to-day, couple week-to-week things where gold has actually surprised me with a little bit of the strength it's exhibited right here. But all that does is serve to reinforce the outlook for this year and the overall outlook for 2016 to 2018. So it's just corroborating that that whole scenario, and I think that that bodes well for 2018 in gold.
So you think external events are causing it, or external events are playing into what would have been a normal cycle anyway?
I get asked questions similar to that very often, and I think that ultimately external events and fundamentals need to reinforce market moves at a certain point. But to me, and I actually just explained this again, kind of elaborated on a little bit in my September Insight track, that the fundamental events rarely occur at the major top or the major bottom. It's they're more the drivers of that accelerated move. If someone's an Elliott wave aficionado, that would be in the third wave or on a C wave decline. But that's just a way of really expressing how a market moves. Whether or not you like Elliott wave or give it any credibility, it's a very standard textbook way of how markets move. You know, once you've seen a big downtrend, there's a lot of damage that needs to be repaired before you can sustain a true bull market, and vice versa. And so you need this bottoming process, and the wave structure is something that helps identify that. And there are certain characteristics you look for in the different waves. And usually that third wave, which can also be described as the second advance, you get your initial advance as the one wave, then you get a pretty serious pullback, which is your two or second wave. Then you get ready for the more dynamic advance, which is your third wave. That's usually when the fundamental events kick in. And they'll often kick in right when a market is poised to break out of a key range or above a key resistance level, maybe one that's held for a year or two or a few years, and you look at gold, and really since 2014, it's tried to make it up to the $1,380 to $1,400 level a couple times, going back to early 2014, then in last year's initial run up. So it wouldn't surprise me to see gold maybe plateau a little below that, build up a new base, and then as it's getting ready to take off, you get those type of fundamental external events kick in. And that's when the two kind of really the synergy of both the market action and the external event, you get them playing in tandem. And that's usually when half the people look at it and say, oh, I knew that was coming. Though up until now, they've been saying gold's going nowhere or vice versa. But the market usually reveals things ahead of time. And that may be a reflection that the powers that be, the big money, whatever you want to call it, without making it like some big
conspiratorial
theory. Yeah. It's just how the markets work. That some people are going to be aware of certain bigger events before others, and they're going to be starting to act on it, starting to accumulate something like gold. And then when it hits the news, that's when your Johnny come latelys often jump in after the big spike up, and you get that initial pullback, and all of a sudden those latecomers are underwater in their position real quickly. And that's kind of also what creates this wave action, is panic buying at the top and panic selling at the lows. And so, you know, to answer your question, I think that the two tend to drive each other, and it really cycles, although I use the term governing many times, a better description is that they're timing these things. They're making that timing aware to the astute observer. They're measuring things that go on, whether it be psychology, whether it be seasonality. They're measuring that just like a clock or a calendar. But you got to be watching them and paying attention to them, and knowing what type of time measurement you're looking at to be able to capitalize on it.
Right. Yeah, well, it's fascinating to see all of this playing out. I mean, obviously, we know that that J.P. Morgan has accumulated a humongous long position in silver. 600 million ounces is the number I've heard thrown around, according to the COT reports and such. And yet they're still playing the short side of the market, but they seem to have changed their orientation. So perhaps that's something like what you were referring to, the powers that be. So let's talk about oil, the U.S. dollar, and the stock markets. First, oil. Oil and other commodities. What are you seeing in your crystal ball there?
Well, oil is a perfect example of what I was just talking about with gold, and that is when, even going back to 2014, there was a very consistent 3-year cycle in crude. And I was looking for a significant top in mid-2014 and then plummeting prices into first quarter of 2016. And when crude finally started to kind of give up the ghost there and really sell off, and we came into that 2016 low, I had several, I'm not sure if you and I were even discussing it around that time, but often questions of, okay, you're saying that this should be a major bottom. So, you know, is it time to really get on the bull side of oil? And my answer consistently from January all the way up to the present was, no, you need to have a bottoming process unfold. And there was one podcast I did back in second quarter 2015, and it basically the the interviewer titled it, you know, 1 to 2 year bottoming process needed in crude. And my outlook all along has been that crude would kind of languish down near its lows, have some moderate rallies, but be met with selling each time until September, October of 2017. And that's when some of my cycles, both in the crude market and also geopolitically, there's some very intriguing Middle East cycles that that I've been documenting for a decade that have pinpointed the time between September 2017, September 2018 to be pretty momentous in the Middle East. And so these crude cycles are just reinforcing that. And then I started getting lead indicators in the products, unleaded gas and heating oil, about a month and a half ago, telling me that their bottom was already intact. Crude still hasn't completely confirmed that. But then you get a fundamental event like Hurricane Harvey, all of a sudden,
right,
disrupting supply of the refineries, the products. And lo and behold, gas and heating oil shoot up just like the markets had revealed weeks before anyone had any tropical storms on their radar. And so that's how another example of also what I was just discussing with the external forces. Now, that's on a smaller scale. Smaller scale as far as the markets are concerned, not as far as anyone dealing with it in Texas and the surrounding areas. But that's just one example of those external events kicking in right when a market has already given signs of a bottom, already given an initial rally and pullback. And then when gas and heating oil were getting back towards their highs, the second time, that's all of a sudden when Harvey started showing up on all the radars and then intensifying. And next thing you know, at least the front months of gas were really spiking higher. And I think that that is just a kind of a early warning sign of what I see developing over the next 1 to 2 years in oil, that this is when I thought we'd see our secondary bottom. Kind of like the secondary low I was talking about with gold in late 2016, that this third quarter 2017 is when I thought we'd see crude set a secondary bottom and then start to develop a more sustained, a more convincing uptrend over the course of the next couple years. There are still several signals on a short to intermediate basis that it needs to give to convince me that we are that we've put in that bottom, that there won't be a checking of those lows, and also to tell me that we've broken through some significant enough levels that that you're going to start attracting more buying and more attention from more traders.
Mm-hmm. So you think the bottoming process in oil is similar to the bottoming process that we saw in precious metals, and they kind of become disfavored and disheartened markets where the participants just are convinced they're dead in the water?
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, step back and look at the forest for the trees, you pull up maybe a weekly chart of crude and pull up a weekly chart, actually of silver would be the best comparison, and their moves since late 2015 and even before that, even going all the way back to 2014, excuse me. You've seen some similar moves where you get the initial rally last year, then you get this consolidation and correcting phase from there, and coming back into this mid-2017 low point where you get the second wave, the higher low developing. And so they're similar in wave structure, even though there are times where the highs or lows in one market's going to be differing from the other. I'm just saying the general movement in those markets has been similar, and they're poised for the onset of that more sustainable, more accelerated advance in the coming months and the coming 1 to 2 years, which goes along with my outlook for commodities and for the dollar.
Mm-hmm. So commodities. So yeah, speaking of the dollar, so the dollar has broken down. You know, it's below 92 today. And what have we got to look forward to there?
The dollar is, you know, I don't know whether to go all the way back to my big picture, long-term thing, which I'm sure we've discussed a couple times. But to me, there is this major multi-generational cycle that has involved currency wars every 40 years since the beginning of our country. Since the, you know, the battle against taxation without representation, and then the first foray into fiat currency with the Continentals that crashed from the mid-1770s into the early 1780s. And ever since that, every 40 years, you have seen a similar battle. It's taken different forms. In the mid-1810s, you had the battle over the rechartering of the Bank of the United States, and it was finally approved in 1816. And a few years later, you had a panic, the Panic of 1819. And 40 years after that, in the 1850s, you had the government starting to kind of reduce the amount of silver in coins, another manipulation at the currency. And by 1857, you had the suspension of both silver and gold. Again, it was that battle between hard currency and fiat currency. 1890s, same thing. Right around that 1896 was the election, which the whole thing was fought over gold standard and versus silver standard versus kind of a bimetallic standard.
Right.
You jump into the 1930s, you had the suspension of gold and silver and the resulting second crash from that. No one ever talks much about the 36-37 crash in the market because of what had happened in 29, but it was one of the worst crashes of the last century. And then you fast forward to the 1970s, again, right at that really, 1976, the sixth year of the decade, was the kind of final divorce decree from gold, the Jamaica Accord. Now, there had been events leading up to that, the collapse of Bretton Woods, the Nixon gold shock. But from 76, when the Jamaica Accord was signed, through 80, you just saw this massive inflationary move. You saw gold and silver just surging, and the dollar, when based against gold and silver, just collapsed, even though its comparative value to other currencies didn't look near as drastic. And so it has been like clockwork that every 40 years, you've seen this type of battle, and you've seen, in most cases, it's against gold and silver. It's against any accountability, any hard currency, and in support of a fiat paper, easily manipulated currency. And that has had some very inflationary impact in the recent times. And I have been expecting something similar in this period of time. Even when I outlined this whole cycle 5-6 years ago, I was talking about how you can look at each of those decades on a 40-year basis, and there's a very consistent kind of action-reaction that takes place where the 3 through the 6 or 7 year of that decade, so in this case, 2013 to 2016, late 2016, early 2017, there's a lot of underlying events occurring that haven't yet really impacted the target market. And it's kind of what we were talking about a few minutes ago with external right. events and cycles. Mm-hmm. And to me, I thought we'd see the dollar rally into late 2016, early 2017. And then the effect of many of these events start to take hold. And from 2017 into 2021, we would see a real battle against the dollar, and that you would see a new inflationary environment come about from about mid-2017, when a lot of these commodity cycles bottom, into 2019, and then another surge into probably 2021. So it fits with all that, but on a more immediate scale, the dollar has, it's been in a trading range really for over 2.5 years, and just now is it finally beginning to probe the low of that trading range, which was just below 92. I think the on a continuous contract, the spike low of a year or so ago was 91.88, and you're just starting to spike below that. Often that first spike will trigger a rebound, and then you get that second attack where now it has built up some new momentum to the downside, and that's when you usually see your more accelerated move. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a little bit of a reactive, call it a dead cat bounce from these levels, but the dollar is more convincingly showing that it has turned the corner and it's starting to build a what could be a multi-year downtrend. But that's one of those things too. Anytime I say something like that, I'll get certain listeners or readers that want to take that to the all-out extreme, kind of a Chicken Little mentality. And that's not how the markets work in almost every case. So there still are a few phases of that downtrend before you're likely to see a real accelerated move to the downside. Mm-hmm. And fundamental events will probably be continuing to build their own momentum there until they hit that tipping point, or all the forces weighing on the dollar, finally, you kind of have a cross the Rubicon type of moment. And that's when you really get the convincing moves that everyone says, oh, we knew this was coming, or we should have seen this coming, or nobody could have seen this coming. You kind of get all three forms of denial going on there.
Right. Yeah, well, everybody knows it. Everybody's hindsight, if you will, is 2020 or 2010. It's acute, but coming up with these moves before they happen is really the key, and not just for investing, but also for business. Look, the dollar going down, exports will invariably be going up, which could be good for the large multinational stocks, because also their profits are denoted in dollars. They have to translate to dollars. And if the dollar is down, their profits are going way up. If the dollar is down, it's down 10% now from its high almost. That means that their international profits, when translated into dollars, are going to be 10% higher. And they didn't even have to do anything. No investment, nothing. So that's why these trends are so important for you to understand.
Well, yeah, and even when, and again, I'm on record with this, but in second quarter of 2016, some of the articles I wrote and some interviews that I did, where I was explaining that all my dollar cycles, and it wasn't just that broad 40-year cycle, because that's, that's a big macroeconomic type of thing that you can have. There can be a year or two of wiggle room to either side. You can't really time market decisions on that broad of a basis. But all of my more precise analysis was saying that the dollar should peak in late 2016, early 2017. And one of my conclusions from that and this was before the nominee was even ascertained, my conclusion was we would see a Republican in office, because if you go back to the mid-80s, every dollar move is very closely coordinated with the appropriate administration. And a Republican administration has always coincided with a declining dollar. And one of the reasons is just what you described, that it's viewed as good for exports, a way to spur the economy. You go back to the mid 80s, and when I think it was in 85, I can remember when James Baker was the I believe he was Secretary of the Treasury at the time. You know, he kind of switched positions in that administrative administration, I think, to chief of staff at one point. But he was on every time the dollar would even bounce, he'd be on the morning talk shows, the news shows, wherever, and talking down the dollar in one way or another, either talking about the benefits of a declining dollar or that they could still see it lower or it doesn't hurt. Whatever it was always the same narrative that we want to see the dollar lower. And sure enough, it had from 85 to 87, saw a substantial drop. And that was what, you know, Republicans viewed as positive. And you look at the two big moves up in the dollar, they've been during the Clinton administration and during the Obama administration. In fact, the dollar bottomed in 08, and now it really kind of vacillated near its lows for several years. Saw a secondary bottom in 2011, and really didn't start to advance until mid 2014. But that entire advance took place in sync with the Democratic administration. The previous decline started in 01, early months of the George W. Bush administration, and continued all the way into 08. So that correlation has been pretty consistent, at least for the last 30 years. And so there's a guiding philosophy there, whether it's right or wrong. I'm not even debating that. It just is. And that's, you know, when I'm analyzing the markets, analyzing the charts, you can debate the rationale for something, or the good and bad, the morality of it. That's all fine.
It's irrelevant.
That's a different discussion. The discussion I'm concerned with first and foremost is, what are the markets showing? What are the charts showing? What are the cycles showing? And does that reveal something to me about what could happen? And that's why I was talking about a likely Republican administration in 2017.
Yeah. And here we are. And Trump has pretty much done nothing but talk down the dollar since he got into office. So now, Eric, one final market just want to cover briefly, because our time is limited, but the stock market, it seems to have gone up and up and up and up in the face of what everyone has felt have been bad fundamentals. And yet, up until recently, it hit 22,000. That was its high. And now it's looking a little toppy. But just because you think something is hitting its peak doesn't mean that it is necessarily.
Right. And one of the things I describe with the stock market and the individual stock indices is I compare it to an old wooden roller coaster. And you may get one car, two car, three cars over the peak and even starting on the down slope. But until that last car goes over the peak, nothing really moves or accelerates to the downside. And that's often what you see in a lot of these indexes. And even more recently, you go back a couple months ago, the Dow Transports, the Russell 2000, peaked and saw some pretty significant drops in particularly between late July and mid to late August. I think the Russell lost over 100 basis points. But they're just kind of some of those early cars getting over the top of the roller coaster. And you still get others trying to to spike to new highs. The Dow and the S&P rebounded. They've been trading below their peaks. Meanwhile, the NASDAQ 100 was just able to eke out a retest and a spike above its August or late July top. And often that, when you get that lone index giving one final high, you know, which, of course, if you turn on the television or something, that'll be what they lead with. You know, this particular index just hit record highs. Well, okay, that's significant. There's no denying that. But when you put it into context, there's some serious divergence happening there. There's several yellow flags, warning signs popping up, and so, you know, that may be the index to see when it finally gives a good signal of a reversal lower, that then they all move in lockstep. But the thing that I was talking about coming into this year and have been heightening that focus even more now that we're into the key period is this decennial cycle where during the 7 year of each decade, 13 of the last 16 decades going back to the 1850s, that you see a significant sell-off in the market, usually stretching into the 8 year of the decade. But I kind of narrow that down to the period of time within that year when you see the majority of the losses, often the entire drop takes place in this time period, and it's between July and November. And you go back even a couple decades ago, 1997, the entire sell-off on the Asian financial crisis was July through October. And in fact, the following year, it mimicked that, seeing another sell-off July through October on the Russian ruble crisis. In 1987, you saw your stock market crash happen during that time frame. It doesn't always stretch for that entire period, and many times it extends beyond that period, but the majority of the decline, the most devastation is often done in that time period. And the more interesting thing to me was that since that 1997 initial drop on the Asian financial crisis, you've seen both a 2 year and a 3 year kind of overlapping cycles indicate a similar thing where you get this third quarter, sometimes stretching into the fourth quarter sell off. 2011 was a perfect example where markets peaked in May, saw secondary highs in July, and then saw a pretty sharp retracement into early October. And so both this 2 year, 3 year, and 10 year cycle were all coming together in 2017. And so I was focused on July through November for what I called the decennial danger period. But I even broke that down into three phases. The first one was from late July into August 18th to the 22nd. And that's when I thought we'd see the first drop. The second one is from September 5th to the 29th, and the third one still to come. But this is also kind of looking at these previous declines, combining that with some other revealing indicators and cycles that I use, and looking at the greatest synergy of all those things coming together. That's when triggered me to pinpoint these three time frames when I thought the market would be most vulnerable. And so far, the first one was fulfilled pretty consistently or pretty accurately, with the market selling off into April 18th or 21st, rebounding. Now we've just entered what I see as the second danger period, lasting through most of the month of September.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting. I mean, they're all interconnected, too. I guess that's one thing that you see with these markets, stock market, dollar, and gold and silver, right? There definitely is a connection between them.
Yeah, and it's especially when you get the more accelerated moves or the breakout moves, markets, one or two of those markets breaking to to new multi-year highs or breaking below new multi-year lows, all of a sudden that's when the correlation that you're referring to becomes far more reliable. When markets are kind of consolidating in wide trading ranges, those correlations often disappear and individual fundamentals or factors impact each market with greater impact. But it's when you get the accelerated move or the breakout move that all of a sudden they kind of all stand up and take notice and start to follow each other in lockstep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're in for some interesting times here. It's amazing what we're seeing happen with weather disasters, with foreign policy disasters, North Korea and all that. We don't even need to get into that. We'd be here all day. But certainly the fundamentals are adding up to a very interesting picture and a lot of market volatility and cycle reversals. So, Eric, we got to go now. Just to confirm, where's the best place to find your work?
It is, as you said in the beginning, at our primary website, insidetrack.com. That's insidetrack.com. And also, we've got a lot of articles and reports archived at 40yearcycle.com. That's the numbers 40 and then the words year cycle, 40yearcycle.com.
All right. Excellent. And again, if you got any questions for Eric, myself, anything, this interview, anything else, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. Our Twitter feed is @KerryLutz and our Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Eric, we'll check in with you in a couple months, but it looks like we're in for interesting times ahead.
Sounds great, Kerry. Thanks for having me back.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.